7, presentation by Siegel regarding the December 31, 2013 valuation report. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the board. I'm Paul Angelo. I'm joined by my colleague and John Monroe, and here to present the one routine thing that we do for you every year, which is the actual evaluation report, in this case as of December 13, 2013. I say that it is routine in that, you know, in theory, by the time we get to this point, all the decisions have been made. The assumptions have been adopted. Whatever interpretations of any sort of legal stuff or plan design issues have all been settled with the board well in advance of today. So this is the relatively mechanical process of taking your participant data, your plan provisions, and your actual assumptions, and all of your funding policies, and putting those into a numerical result, which you will then adopt and send on to the county and your other employers. So we're going to go through this. Our report, those of you who haven't seen it before, it's a pretty typical actuarial report format, sort of a pyramid where there's a super summary in section one, has a text summary of what happened since last year, and then a couple pages of numbers that really capture the results of the valuation. Section two is a little more detail, some of the member demographics. Section three gets into a little more of the reporting information. And then finally, section four is the do not try this at home section, where we have the basis for the valuation, the assumptions, and the plan provisions. So I'm going to ask John to walk through the basics here, let him sort of do, in keeping with our baseball theme, we'll have John will do the play-by-play, and I will do the color commentary as we go through. So John, go ahead.
Thanks, Paul. So everybody got their nice blue binder, I hope.
With our new logo name on the Siegel Consulting now. We really like this because now at Sackers, we're no longer alphabetized under T. Because we used to be, it was the Siegel Company, and they would always put us under T. So now we're going to be
under S.
Now we're under S, where we belong. That's right. Okay.
And that's the whole reason you spent all that money to do that.
Exactly. So we don't go, let's not go there. Okay. Thank you, John.
Going to start in on page Roman numeral 2 with some of the significant issues in this year's valuation. It's been a few key events and items that are reflected in this valuation. The first one is this valuation reflects changes in the leave cash out assumptions that were adopted by this board back in August, I believe. So there was changes to the leave cash out assumptions for the non-PEPRA members. There were significant reductions for the people that were hired before January 1, 2011, and more modest reductions for those hired after January 1, 2011. So those assumption changes are reflected in this report. And the assumption changes resulted in a decrease in the average employer contribution rate of about 4.1% of payroll and the average member contribution rate of about 0.3% of payroll. And we've also reflected in this valuation the changes that this board adopted to the funding policy. Those changes, however, did not have any impact on these valuation results, as those changes were more for future changes in unfunded liability, like, you know, surplus and stuff like that. In this valuation, the funded ratio, which is the assets divided by the liabilities, and in this case what we call the valuation value of assets as compared to the actual accrued liabilities, that ratio increased from about 70.6% to 76.4%, so there's about a 6% increase in the funded ratio on a valuation value of assets or smooth basis after we apply the asset smoothing method. So there was a pretty significant increase in the funded ratio. Unfunded liability, which is the difference between the assets and liabilities, that decreased by about $500 million from $2.3 billion to $1.8 billion. So those, the increase in the funded ratio and the decrease in unfunded liability, mainly due to changes in the leave cash out assumptions we just spoke about, and there was also an investment return after smoothing that exceeded the 7.25% assumption. So the return after smoothing was around 9%, and that reflects recognition of recent years' favorable returns plus part of the about 15.5% return during 2013. So this valuation is as of December 31st, 2013. It does not reflect any returns after that date.
And then one thing, we'll mention this again later, you know, we show these funded ratios and the unfunded liability on what's called a smooth value basis. current practice in actuarial practice is to also make sure you know what those numbers are on a market value basis, more of a snapshot basis. Those are contained later on in this section, and there's also, we have a comment, we always show you what the funded ratio would have been. We'll get to that later, but just for your reference, that 76.4, if you did that on a market value basis, that would be about 83%. And last year, it was about 73%. So on a smooth basis, it went up about 6%, 6 percentage points, whereas on a market value basis, it went up about 10 percentage points. That's because for the second year in a row, you've had market returns higher than the assumed rate. And so again, people sometimes ask us, well, which one should we be looking at? If someone asks me, you know, am I in a bar and somebody finds out I'm a trustee and they say, what's your funded ratio? Which number do I give them? And you really should give them both numbers, because one is your snapshot where you are, but the smooth one is the one that determines your cost today. So it's almost like the smooth one is where your cost is today, and then the market one is where your cost is going to go over the next couple of years. And we'll revisit that again when we talk about asset smoothing. Thanks, John.
Yep. So this point, why don't we flip to section 3, page 66. And this page is one of the standard pages that we cover in some detail each year. It's basically a reconciliation of unfunded liability from last year to this year. Started out with $2.3 billion last year. We add on the normal cost. That's about $212 million. We then expect the unfunded liability to go down by expected member contributions and employer contributions, about $412 million. We add interest on all those. So we expect the unfunded liability to go down very slightly from about $2.3 billion to about $2.2 billion. So not much change is expected, but then we have a lot of items here in item 6 here that show how the unfunded liability actually ended up at $1.8 billion. So we have an investment return, an investment gain of about $96 million. So that's the 9% return after smoothing compared to the 7.25. Item B, we have actual contributions less than expected. This is due to the 18-month delay here. That's about $100 million. That's because the contribution rate in the 12 valuation increased about 12% as compared to the 11 valuation. So that was a large number there. We have lower than expected individual salary increases. So this is a person that was in the last valuation. They're in this valuation as an active member also, and their pay did not go up quite as much as we expected it. So now we're projecting lower benefits, and that equals lower liabilities. We had a lower than expected cost of living adjustment for retirees and beneficiaries. Inflation in recent years, changes in the consumer price index have been lower than expected. That's a gain of about $48 million. Item E, we also had a mortality gain for retirees and beneficiaries. So more people died than expected. So that results in a gain. So that's favorable to the plan, but not favorable to those retirees. So
I taught John all his jokes.
Well, a lot of things like the mortality gain and the salary gain, I mean, it's good for the plan in a way, but it's, you know, from the member perspective or the retiree perspective, it probably wasn't good. So, but from the plan perspective, it is it does result in a lower unfunded liability.
Yeah, pretty much the only place where actuaries and the general public agree on what's good news is investments. That's where everybody agrees that higher is better. But it is kind of counterintuitive sometimes that the things which are adverse to the experience of either your active members or your retired members turn out to be financially favorable, and that's what we call an actuarial gain. So.
6F there, that's the other gain or loss. That's a small gain there. That's just basically everything else combined together. And then finally, we have the changes in assumptions results in a decrease in unfunded liability of just over $200 million. So you add all those item 6s up, and then you get decrease in unfunded liability of over $400 million.
I want to notice how it's fairly unusual. You'd think on the average, you know, half the time when you review the assumptions, they'd be more costly and half the time less costly. I don't know, maybe it's the second law of thermodynamics, you know, things tend to fall apart. In our experience, assumptions tend to move in a more expensive direction, whereas the exception here is really because of the change in your in what we call the terminal pay. That's not the legal term, but the lead cash out assumptions. That's really what's driven this fairly unusual event, and that is an assumption change that actually lowers your accrued liability and lowers your costs.
Okay, going to move back into Section 1 here, Roman numeral 2. Now we're going to talk about the employer contribution rate, and that decreased from about nearly 50% of pay on average, again, this is all employers combined, to about 43.5% of payroll. And again, that was due to a lot of the items that we just looked on that last page, lower leave cash out assumptions, the investment gain, and lower individual salary increases. If we go to
John, would you just say those words again, that the employee rate went down? I just like hearing that, you know, because, man, I mean, after the tech bubble burst, you know, because of asset smoothing, we had 5 years of rates going up, 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 up. And then after the housing bubble burst, we had 5 years of rates going up, 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 up. You know, the thing about asset smoothing is investment experience. You live with it five times. We cushion the blow, but it means then you have this series. We've even had folks challenge us and say, your assumptions are wrong every year, right? Because we have a loss every year. We go, no, actually, we were only wrong once. That was in 2008. Since then, the assumptions have actually been, you know, we've done better than the assumption, but we're digesting that loss. So just, and again, this is an extraordinary change because of the change in the leave cash out, and that's the driver. John's going to look at the other components in a second. But, you know, once in a while, let's just stop and take a breath and say, you know, sometimes the rates actually do go down, and that's what we're seeing this year.
Well, yes. And I think that's great because I know, but in my logic area, don't we want 50% of payroll? Or I guess, no, never mind. I'm
No, you want a 50-50 split. Oh, heavens, please don't say you want 50%
no,
of payroll.
No, okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's, all right, I get
yeah.
it.
Yeah, okay. I mean, remember, we want a 50-50 split.
There, it's just the percentage of the total payroll.
Yeah, this is a percentage of payroll, right.
This is why
and
I
again,
not become
you know,
an actuary.
Yeah, and the you know the idea of pension plan contribution rates in the order of 50%. I mean that's what gets people talking about sustainability and such. I mean it's you know this is not unusual for us to see in our California practice. I know I talked to actuaries around the country and they're talking about boy our contribution rate went from 15% of pay up to 18% of pay. I don't know how we're going to survive, and I just go you have no idea. Yeah, so these are very serious numbers, but the fact that we are now backing down below the 50%, you know, you get the direction is where we want it to go, or we hope it to go. Yeah. So how did we get there, Don?
Sure. If we go to Section 2, page 32, it's chart 15. Now we're again looking at the employer contribution rate, how we got from the employer contribution rate in the last valuation, how we got the employer contribution rate in this valuation. Start off with an average employer rate near 50% of pay, have a gain, investment gain about 1% of pay, have the due to the 18-month delay, contribution rates going up on average a little bit over 1% of pay. Now I know this item has been talked about a lot in recent board meetings, and what we may see in the next valuation is finally a reversal of this number because the employer rate is now actually decreasing.
That's a question I was going to ask. And again, for a long time, this adjustment has always been, you know, because of a lag in implementing a higher rate. That means what we call a contribution loss, a shortfall. And now, again, it seems it should turn out when we look at the same time next year that because that lower rate, what was it, 40, because of the 43.5, is going to be implemented 18 months after the valuation date, you're going to be collecting the 49.8. And so now we hope next year you'll see a contribution gain because of higher contributions because of that very same reason. We've been saying for years it's supposed to average out. And again, as I said, because of the asset losses, it seems to have always been in the same direction. Now maybe we'll see a reversal of that.
And and because of the 18-month delay, it may not be quite a gain in the next valuation, but it should be pretty close to a neutral number at least. But eventually it'll be a gain here. Lower than expected individual salary increases, decrease a little over 1% of pay. The next item is an item that we did not see on the unfunded liability reconciliation. It's effective amortizing prior year's unfunded liability over a greater than expected total payroll. So this is when we amortize the unfunded liability, first we calculate a dollar amortization payment and then we divide it by the payroll. The payroll is assumed to go up at, I believe, it's either 3.75 or 4% a year. And in this year, it actually went up slightly over the amount expected. So this is another item that's changed since recent years. In recent years, the payroll, the total payroll has not increased, and that's led to increases in the unfunded liability rate because we're expressing it over a payroll that's lower than expected. Then we have the lower than expected COLA for the retirees and beneficiaries, about 0.5% of pay. We have the mortality gain, about 37 basis points gain, and net other experience, small number, 13 basis point gain. And then we have the largest number, which is the changes in assumptions, changes in the leave cash out assumption. That's 4% of pay reduction in the employer rate on average. That represents about 2/3 of the total change of about 6% of payroll. So that's basically how we got from the 50% last year to the 43.5% this year. So moving back into the front of report, Roman numeral 3. That rate, the rates we've been talking about, those have been the average rates, and no particular employer pays those rates. We have in chart 14 all the detail on the employer rates, and it may be worth taking a short look at those rates, because there's a new format that we've used this year. If you go to chart 14 on page 21 in section 2, we used to show an enormous amount of rates in this report, really, for a few reasons. We would show the contribution rate, and then then there's these details where you got to like calculate a little bit different rate for the first $350 a month of payroll, another rate over $350 a month of payroll. We've excluded those details. Those will go in the contribution rate packet that ultimately goes to the Board of Supervisors, but those were mainly a distraction. And and the other thing is, now since we don't have separate rates for pre or post 2011 employees, because we're using the same leave cash out assumptions, now we're also able to condense the rates. So now the table is much more readable and useful, I think, as we're able to compare what the rate is for each and every cost group, this year versus last year. So hopefully that's of more use to the employers and, easier to tell how much their particular rate changed.
Yeah, there's a contest going on between Contra Costa Retirement System and Orange County as who has the fattest actuarial report. And I think you folks were winning last year, but now that we no longer have the 24 rate groups, because it's back to only 12, now I think that they may still be ahead of you on that one. So because your report is actually quite a bit thinner this year, because we don't have the pre and post 2012 rates.
Well, we win in the environmental category.
Yes, exactly. Now, one thing I do like, again, partly for the just as an educational piece, the thing that's nice about page 21 is you can see the different ways that the employer rate gets split. I mean, after all, you think of the rates as split between the employer and the members. So that's sort of the first division. And then the employer rate, it's a classic kind of 2x2 matrix. There's the basic rates, which is for the basic formula that applies to each tier. And then separately, we show the cost of the fact that there's a COLA. So you can see separately the standalone cost and what the cost is just of the COLA. So if you did not have a COLA, you would only be paying the basic rate. The additional cost due to the COLA is separately identified. So that's the split one way. And the other is, each of these rates, as with every actuarial contribution rate, there's a normal cost, which is the cost for each new year of service. Only active members have a normal cost. And then there's the unfunded liability payment paid primarily by the employer. And so that's how you get this two-by-two. We show the basic rate, normal cost first, and then the unfunded liability to get you the total basic rate. We then show the COLA rate, normal cost plus unfunded liability. So if you want to see your total basic rate, it's 24.53. I'm just picking on cost group one because it's the top one there. And if you want to know what the total cost of COLA is, it's 8.39. But if you want to split it the other way and say, I want to know what's my current year cost, basic and COLA, there you go across, you see the 15.4. And how much is my unfunded liability cost? I don't care whether it's from basic or COLA. I want to know how much is this debt that the employer is paying off, this pension debt. That's the 17.5%. So you can see this two-by-two split. You can either split it as the type of benefit, basic or COLA, or you can split it as the component of the cost in the actuarial model, which is normal cost or unfunded liability payment. And then as John says, we have that for all the different cost groups here. This is, again, a much cleaner page to see that because it doesn't have the different rates for the Social Security integrated plans, and of course it doesn't have two complete sets of rates based on whether you came in before or after 2012.
The other disclaimer about all the rates in this report, they exclude any employer pickup of member contributions or what you guys call subvention or any reverse pickups, you know, reverse subvention where the member pays a lot of, you know, some of the safety members pay part of the employer contribution rate. So this report does not reflect any of that.
Okay.
If we go back to Section 1, Roman numeral 3, now on to the member rate. The member rate in the valuation on average decreased from about 12.2% to about 11.9%, about 30 basis points. I'm not going to flip back to the chart that shows this change. I mean, it was virtually all due to the change in the leave cash out assumption. That was about 30 basis points for the member reduction in the average member rate. One other item here, we're no longer, this was an item we brought to the board, I think it was almost a year ago, we're no longer rounding the PEPRA member rates to the nearest 25 basis points. There was a discretion allowed to not do that anymore, and so we're not doing that anymore.
That lets you see that the normal cost for the members and for the employers is equal for the PEPRA tiers as indicated by statute.
Exactly. Then moving on to the kind of the bottom half of Roman numeral 3 here, where we have the reference on page 5, we're now talking about unrecognized investment gains. So as part of our asset smoothing method, where we apply a 5-year smoothing of gains or investment gains or losses above or below the assumed return, which is now 7.25, we currently are deferring just over $500 million in investment gains this year. So those have not been recognized in the actual value of assets. Last year, that number was about $157 million. So there's been a significant increase in that number due to the over 15% return during 2013. We then talk about on this page, you know, what would happen if we were to recognize those gains immediately. If you recall, a few years ago, we put these types of numbers in our report. As the market value of assets started to deviate significantly from the actual value of assets, that was mainly due to the large loss in 2008 and 2009. So we decided that we needed to, you know, we'll keep our eye on the funding numbers after smoothing, but we also need to look at the numbers on a market value basis. But now we're kind of in the opposite situation. We have gains to recognize. We still think this is useful information. It shows kind of what we spoke a little bit before. If we were to recognize those gains, they're about 8% of the market value of assets. The funded ratio would increase from 76% to 83%, and the contribution rate, the average employer contribution rate, would decrease from about 43.6% of payroll to about 37.7% of payroll, so about a 6% decrease. So that kind of gives us an idea of how, you know, if everything goes expected over the next few years, kind of how those numbers might change due to those gains. But of course, each year we'll be reflecting any new market, you know, experience and so on.
It's sort of like a cheap contribution projection. You know, it gives you an idea. It's not quite exactly true that 4 years from now, once we've smoothed in all of those deferred gains that we have this year, that your cost will be exactly 37.7. But that gives you a magnitude of where it's going. As John pointed out, when we first put these bullets in here, it was after the 2008 decrease. And I just want to point, you know, John mentioned that the these deferred gains, you know, we now have $500 million of deferred gains. It's like rainy day money, you know, to offset future losses. How cool is that? Last year it was $157 million. The year before that it was $390 million the other way. Okay, so recently, 2 years ago, we were deferring losses. We were still had not completely recognized the bad news from 2008. And you know, your plan, because you're a calendar year plan, you know, the losses in 2008 happened twice. They happened in June, and they happened in the fall, in September, October. Well, for all the June 30 plans, that means that that actually got split into 2 years. So they would showed a loss in the 7-8 year. That was because the market went down 5% in June. And then they showed another huge loss in the 8-9 year, whereas you show both of those losses in a single year. Well, we're now, that's 5 years behind. In fact, 2 years ago, that was 5 years behind us. So for the first time, we recognize that. I'll ask you to just to give a sense of scale. If you look at page 8, I love asset smoothing, so I'm not going to let you get off this easy on asset smoothing.
Did you invent that, by the way?
If you look at page 8, you can see, again, it's hard to read the exact numbers, but you can see the gray square, that's the market value. And for 2013 and for 2012, it's above the orange box, which is the smooth value. By the way, there's an actuarial value and a valuation value. The difference between those two is your non-valuation reserves. They are very small. That's why you can't even see them on the graph, because they're sitting right on top of each other. So in practice, the actuarial value and the valuation value are both the smooth value. Well, you can see, you go back to 2008. That's a lot of deferred losses. I mean, this thing, these lines are billions. Right? The hash lines are billions. So that's well over $1 billion of deferred losses. That's what we were staring at January 1 of 2009. And smoothing did exactly what it's hired to do. We had a couple good years, right? After that, that's why they pulled together. And then finally, in 2012, they crossed. And so we got back to where we were back in 2008. You know, where we were then again deferring gains, which is where you like to be. And now, because we had a couple good years in a row, you can see those numbers are spreading apart. And there's the, you can see those are about one half a hash mark apart. That's the $500 million of deferred gains. Last thing I'll mention, John, maybe you were going to go there, but if you go back to page 5, we do like to let you see how that $500 million of deferred gains is going to show up over the next 4 years. That's the one thing we can predict. Now, this is not taking into account any future gains and losses. For example, the year that we're now in, so far, is looking like a gain year. Putting that aside, that $536 million of losses.
Yeah, I know.
It's tough. Well, that's why we got to wait till December 31, okay?
That's all I know.
Good. Yeah,
it's long.
Yeah, I know.
Midnight, December,
that's exactly right. But what this shows is that $535 million is going to come in. It's not level because, you know, these layers are dropping off, but it's pretty level. So you got a pretty big gain in the next val, 173, 127, 97, 101, 36. We have some systems where this pattern is so uneven, we recommend something called re-smoothing. But that's all depending on your fact pattern. And by the way, when it happens, you can't miss it. But it's not happening here. So that 536 is going to show up as gains over the next 4 years. They may have future gains or losses on top of them. But underneath, you're going to have these numbers in each of your next 4 years. So again, this is we just think that some people say asset smoothing isn't transparent. I think it's one of the most clear tools to see exactly how a system like yours deals with an event like 2008. You can tell on any given day exactly how much of that is in your rate base and how much of it is still to be recognized in the future. You can track it back over the layer. Just a lot of information here that you get because of asset smoothing.
Well, just as a part of history, when did we adopt that smoothing policy?
It goes back like forever. I mean,
so back in the 90s?
You've always had asset smoothing. Now, the particular
5-year smoothing period, that's
five. I think if you go way back, you'll find a period where you were using 5-year smoothing, But you were smoothing it a slightly different way. Instead of smoothing the difference between expected return and actual return, that's what we do here. Mm-hmm. Way back in the day, what you used to do is you would only smooth your capital gains and losses. You'd separate your income into current income, realized gains, and unrealized gains, and you would only smooth the realized and unrealized gains. And then eventually the actuaries came to you and said, you know, that's, there are biases built in there. You know, you measure your returns on total return. You should smooth against total return. So I think that would be the thing that you could find in relatively recent history, and even that was probably in the 90s, I would say. But I think you've had five-year smoothing here going back, I'd say, well before
I came on the board.
Well before, yeah. Okay? Okay. I love asset smoothing.
Okay, back to...
Is it on your tombstone?
It is. He smoothed his assets.
If we go back to Section 1, Roman numeral 4, just two other minor points to hit on here. One is middle bullet. There was some additional contributions, prepayments of unfunded liability made by First Five Family Commission and the Sanitary District. Those are reflected in the rates in this valuation.
We track those separately for those employers, John, is that right?
For the First Five, we do, because they're in a cost group with other employers. For the Sanitary District, they're in their own cost group.
Oh, so you don't have to. Yeah, it's automatic. Yeah.
One final bullet here. GASB, I think we spoke about this before. There's changes to the governmental accounting standards. Statements for the plan and the employer, but those for a calendar year plan are not effective until December 31st, 2014. So the results in this valuation for accounting purposes have been done the same way they've always been done, but next year there'll be some new, there'll actually be probably a new little report that'll have the new GASB information in it for the plan. For the employer, it'll be effective for the fiscal year in June 30, 2015. So that's something that we've already started working on and will be definitely be something that we'll be doing a lot of work on over the next year.
Okay, this concludes our prepared remarks.
Any comments or questions? The board or public?
Okay. Pam, Brian, I do have one question.
Yeah, Deborah.
For Siegel. We had a Milliman out here earlier in the year who performed their three-year audit of the valuation. And they raised a couple of issues, refundability factor and payroll projections in their report. And I was just wondering if those suggestions or issues have been changed in any way in this valuation.
Yeah, so the calculation of the refundability factor, we have modified that slightly consistent with their recommendation. So we did take that into account. The other change about the payroll projection, we did not make a change there. I mean, we're right now, I'd say we're not in agreement with what they recommended. So that we've continued to do as we always have.
That sounds like, I'm going to regret asking this, that sounds like an in-the-weeds detail. Can you give me a sense of what the difference
well,
was?
Well, to determine the projected payroll for 2014, let's say, we take all the active members as of December 31st, 2013. We look at how much those active members were paid during 2013. And then we increase those amounts all by... the full salary increase, the inflation, the across the board, and the merit and promotion increases. So, and that's what we say the projected payroll for 2014 will be. And that's what's used as the denominator in converting unfunded liability payments to percent of payroll, everything to percent of payroll. Okay. So then projecting from then on, the assumption is that the payroll will go up, you know, 4% a year. Okay. But in deriving that first year payroll, we take the prior year payroll for all the active members and we increase it by the full assumption. I mean, Milliman says we should only increase it by 4%, okay? But we believe we should increase it by the full assumption because 2013, that's what those members earned. I mean, during 2014, those members are expected to really earn what they earned during 2013 plus the full salary increase. rates. That's our argument, yeah.
And then it's not until the second year that we say, well, now some of those folks are going to leave. They're going to be replaced by folks earlier in the scale, and that's why we go just to the 4% and we leave out the merit and promotion. But for that first year, we're assuming it's the same humans, which means they are going to get merit and promotion increases, and so that's what we've factored in here. So I think that's just an agree-to-disagree situation.
So just to summarize what that what effect that has, if you're using a payroll assumption that's higher than what, say, Milliman would have had you use, then your rates, your cost is spread over a higher amount of payroll.
A little bit higher payroll, right.
Your rate's slightly lower
than
what it would be under the Milliman scenario.
That's correct.
The unfunded liability rate is slightly lower.
Okay.
Doesn't affect normal.
Not the normal cost, because the normal cost sort of is born as a rate, but it's when you convert that unfunded liability schedule, which starts out as dollars, when you convert that into payroll, that's where that difference would come in.
Jim, you have a question?
So when your projected payroll increases are higher than your actual experience, and in that particular year, your contribution rates are higher than what they really needed to be. In the subsequent years, if I'm not mistaken, when you don't actually reach those expectations of payroll increases, then an adjustment downward is made in contribution rates.
I think it's the other way. So if we're assuming the pay is going to go up, 6%, let's say, then the rates right now are lower, and then when it only goes up 3%, the rates go higher, get adjusted higher. Yep.
And for two reasons. When pay goes up slower than assumed, there's actually three things that happen. One is you collect less money than you thought you were going to collect. So that's an immediate contribution loss. The third thing is that your unfunded liability payments are now spread over a smaller payroll than you thought. So that makes that rate go up. But then going the other way, when you're projecting the benefits, which is the first thing you do, you're now projecting benefits lower than you thought, so you'll have a gain. And that's why on the unfunded liability page, you saw a loss for contributions. Now, that was mainly the 18-month delay, but it was also the fact that you didn't collect the full amount on the unfunded payment. And then you saw a gain because of smaller projected benefits than last year. Those are the two things that affect the unfunded. And then when you went to the contribution rate page, now there is a little strange because the actual pay went up a little bit higher than assumed. Maybe where they hired some people, And that's where you actually saw a 0.05, a small rate reduction, because total payroll went up a little faster than assumed, which means your unfunded payment is now spread over a larger payroll, so it went down. But there's always three pieces, and generally two of them are going to be losses and one's going to be a win. But the win is the big one, because when you have smaller projected benefits, that tends to dominate the other two effects.
To an extent, there's an offset.
There is an offset. Okay. There is an offset, yeah. Right?
Yep.
I'll go back to what I always go to with these reports, and you're smiling because you know exactly what I'm going to talk about. I enjoy these reports. I've told you this every time since the first one I saw, because they come out with the figures on, and I'm a numbers person. I like to look at all that. And on page 36, I'll go back to the general tier one. And what I just want to point out is the average monthly benefit for 2,647 retired people is $3,735. I just want to know how large that sum is to live on a fixed income, and I'm being facetious. The disability members, but what surprised me, there's still 661 general tier one members in the system. That surprises me. I thought we were phasing out. And then I'll go to page 38, which is general tier three, and generally these are the two tiers outside of safety that have most of the members in them. And If you go down to the retired members, there's 2,181, and their average salary is only $2,542 a month. So I realize these are average salaries, and there are some that are higher and some that are lower. But it still says it's not a lot of money, and I can speak to that because I am retired and I have a fixed income, and I have what I thought was a decent retirement when I went out the door, and even with the 3% COLA, I'm just managing to stay ahead of the cost of living I had when I was working. I'm thankful for our COLA. I'm thankful for that process. But that's not a lot of money for people to live on. Granted, we have the exceptions to the rule, and we've all been over the paper the past 5 years or regarding that. So I got on my horse. I can off my horse. Thank you. Just wanted to point those out. And that's it's a good report. I see us going in a very positive direction. A lot has to do with the assumption rate going down to 7.25, and also the termination pay no longer being included in the salaries and.